Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 3rd of July, Anno Domini 2010. And you lucky people, you're listening to the Patriotic Edition of Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, happy 4th of July to all of you. And our sincerest thanks to all of those of you who've laid your lives on the line to bring us the freedom we celebrate today.
Does any Revolutionary War veterans feel proud to call in and we'll congratulate you personally?
Or Morse code in. We can get a telegraph running here.
Yeah, ring the bell from beyond the grave.
Right, exactly. All right, yeah, ring the bell. All right, we're going to, before we get to the phones, I want to talk about our poll of the week. It comes from a news story. Sony is recalling 535,000 Vio laptops over fears they may overheat so badly they could cause burns to the skin. Sony says that a flaw in the heating controls can cause the machines to overheat to such an extent that the shape of the laptop is distorted. The problem is related to the heat management system in the BIOS software. Sony warns that the overheating could cause skin burns, although none have been reported so far. The problem applies to F and C series Vios. That's Frank and Charlie series Vios, sold since last January. The recall covers tens of thousands of machines sold in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. The majority, 259,000 of them, have been sold in the U.S. Apparently, the company has had 39 complaints so far. Recently, we became aware of a potential issue affecting certain units within the VPC F11 and VPC CW2 series of notebook PCs, it says on Sony's support website. In rare instances, these notebook computers may overheat due to a potential malfunction of the internal temperature management system, resulting in deformation of the product's keyboard or external casing and a potential burn hazard to consumers. The company says the problem can be fixed with a software update, and it's offering a repair as an alternative. Sony laptops have a history of getting a bit hot and bothered at times. 2 years ago, the company was forced to recall around 400,000 Vios for the same reason. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is, do you own a Sony Vio? The choices are yes, and it's just fine, thanks. Yes, and it gets pretty warm. What, do you think I'm made of money? And does your and those are the three choices. So far, we've got, he said as he quickly hits F5, 35 people in the poll. Most of you, 94% of you, don't even own. Only one person owns one. Two people own one. One guy's got no problem. The other person thinks it gets pretty warm. So please vote in our poll at soundbites.org. When you're done voting in our poll, of course, I know you. You've got more to say about that. And so once you're done taking the poll, if you look at the yellow box underneath the poll, click where it says give us your opinion, and it will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
And you can enter your opinion. So far, four people have entered it. I absolutely don't understand number three, but okay, that's all right. And then when you're done with that, come on back here and
okay.
Give us a call. Does your laptop get too warm for comfort? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ.
Well,
that's 966-5299 and toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And if they go to my website, I mean, I've got some pictures.
And where is your website?
EnrightPC.com. Soon to be changed. It is now, as of July 1st, now known as Enright and Deary PC Services, Inc. We just switched over the name. Dan is now a partner. But I actually have some photos. If you don't think a laptop can burn up, folks, check out the pictures that we have on our website. It's literally, a gentleman came home. He quick ran to the store, and he didn't do the recall on the battery.
Mm-hmm.
Come home. He had only been gone maybe, I think he said, about an hour. comes in, and there's smoke coming out of his house. He looks at one end, down where his den is, and there is flames going. Meanwhile, down the other end is his wife on oxygen in the bedroom, and he's just trying to decide what to go do first. And this thing literally caught on massive fire.
Wow. All right, we're going to the phones. Our first call is Jack. Jack, where are you calling from?
Calling from Irondequoit, Nick.
Okay, and what's your question?
Well, I screwed up my girlfriend's computer. And in fact, she bought it from Dave Enright.
Okay.
What happened is I wanted to get on the Firefox, and we've got Zone Alarm, you know.
Right.
And a little screen came up in the corner, and it said, Firefox wants to contact the Internet. Should you allow it? And by mistake, I said no, and then I said, remember this setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I couldn't get on the Internet. But another screen came back like that, and I reversed it, and I said,
No.
But it still didn't work.
Yeah, here's what you want to do is you got to go into the settings for Zone Alarm.
Yeah.
And you can see all the programs that it's managing. And what you can do is then delete those two things of Firefox. Remove them. So then when you start Firefox up again, it will ask you again, what do you want to do with this?
Let me tell you what happened, though. So in order to get onto the Internet, I went to the little thing in the corner, you know, and I said, shut down Zone Alarm.
Mm-hmm.
So it shut down. Then I got on the Internet, and I tried to reinstall, you know,
Jack,
Zone Alarm.
Jack,
none of that's going to help because the Zone Alarm settings have already been told to block
what
Firefox.
What you have to do is what Dave told you to do. Nothing else will actually work.
Okay, what did he say?
Did you not pay attention,
yeah.
Jack?
Go into the Zone Alarm program.
But how do I get into that?
Zone Alarm, you will see manage programs.
There's the Zone Alarm icon in the taskbar in the bottom right. You can right-click on that and say open, or you can find Zone Alarm in your All Programs list to get into the Zone Alarm program and manage the settings there.
Yeah, there's a list that is called Programs, and you will see the list of all the programs that you've clicked on telling it whether to allow it or disallow it. You go down that whole list. And as a matter of fact, I would recommend that if you find any of them with question marks, select those and then just hit the delete key. But you definitely want to find the Foxfire and delete both of those entries. Now, anytime that you go to reopen a program, and there's any question, it will ask you, what do you want to do with this program? Do you want to allow it or not allow it?
Right.
So that'll get you through it.
Now, can I ask you one other quick question? I tried to reinstall Zone Alarm, and I went through I went to their website, and I did all the other stuff, and it came on, and it downloaded the setup file.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it said, click run after you get the setup file. But there was no run on the screen. You know, there was just the setup file. So I was at like a dead end there.
Well, it depends on what you've told Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have Internet Explorer.
Right.
I've got
Firefox. That's what the instructions were, assuming you had Internet Explorer. And when you download a file in Internet Explorer, you have an option of run or save. If you download it with any other browser, you just go to that downloads folder and double-click the setup program to run that setup program.
Yep.
Go to the download folder and click setup.
Mm-hmm.
But, Jack, you don't want to do that because that won't work.
Yeah,
there's no point in
the icon anymore, though.
It doesn't matter. That won't work.
If you quit Zone Alarm, it will stay quit until your next launch, unless you told it to not launch again.
Or unless he uninstalled it.
I uninstall it with add and remove program.
Okay, then you do have to reinstall it
but
again.
But what you're going to do is you're going to go down to that download folder. You're going to see a program called Zone Alarm, and you're going to double-click on that. It will automatically start installing it. There won't be a run program. It'll just be the Zone Alarm file. You double-click on it. It will automatically start reinstalling it.
I think Firefox default download folder is the desktop.
No, it's usually the download folder within your profile.
Within my documents.
Within XP, yep.
Listen, you guys, I want to thank you. You got a great program, and we really love it.
Thank you.
Thanks for the help.
Thank you. All righty. Zone Alarm does a great job, but sometimes it's a little overzealous. And you have to pay attention to that first screen. If you want Zone Alarm to actually do things, then you really do seriously need to pay attention to that first screen and make sure that you answer yes when you should answer yes and no when you think you shouldn't answer yes. So we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark. Where are you calling from, Mark?
Irondequoit.
Everybody's in Irondequoit today.
Hey, it's where life's worth living.
No, I think that's Webster.
No, we're taking it over from Webster. Webster got hacked their bushes, so it's no longer worth living there. Everybody's coming over to Irondequoit.
Yeah, Webster's gone. It's now Ebster.
Yep.
It's just Ebster. All right, what's your question, Mark?
Okay, I have one of my computers running Windows XP. I've tried three or four times to get Service Pack 3 on it. I've tried installing as an administrator. I keep getting it gets to a certain point, like, quite a long time in the install process, and a screen comes up saying access denied. I've tried unplugging it from the internet to be safe and turned off my firewall and my antivirus. I've even downloaded the complete service pack without trying to get it from the download site because I thought maybe there was a problem with that.
Right.
And even putting it on the desktop and trying to install it as an executable, it still doesn't work. It still runs for about, 20 minutes, half hour, says it's backing up all the settings and files, and then
okay, two quick
denied.
Two quick questions.
Yes.
First, how much free space do you have on your hard drive?
I probably had about 20 or 30 gig space when I did it.
All right. Then the second thing is, my suggestion is dance the security tango before you try to install Service Pack 3.
Okay.
It is very possible that you've got something, you've caught something, and it's blocking access to certain files that need to be changed because it's taken them over.
Okay.
So if you dance the security tango, and dance it all the way through, it's at securitytango.com. Click the Let's Dance button. Pick your operating system, which would be the Windows Waltz. Print out that page and follow the instructions step by step.
Okay.
Got it?
Sounds good.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Yeah, we see that a lot, actually. If you've got a virus, it does prevent you from doing a whole lot of different things. So making sure that your system is clean. Well, in general, making sure your system is clean before you do any sort of upgrade is always a very good idea. All right, our next caller is Zach. Where are you calling from, Zach? Zach, you there? Hello, Zach.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
Brighton.
You have to press the magic
button. I'm sorry, we're only taking calls from Irondequoit today. All right, we'll take your call just for the heck of it. What's your question, Zach?
Well, I have a Vio.
Excellent.
And I haven't had any problems with it. I was able to update the BIOS pretty easily. But the weird thing is I didn't hear about the problem from the company. You know, I was on a PC Mag website, and they mentioned it. It's just strange to me that it takes them a while to get that information out to owners.
Well, you may not have had one of the two series.
I looked it up. I did.
Oh, you did, and they still didn't hear from.
Did you register your Vio with Sony?
Absolutely, I registered when we bought it.
With your current email address, or has your email address changed?
Absolutely, I just bought it a few months ago. I did the whole thing. Yeah, right. You know, I did.
Well, they did say 5 million are being recalled.
Uh huh.
How long does it take to send out 5 million emails?
About 13 seconds. If you've got a very slow machine.
Yeah.
But anyhow, it hasn't run hot for me. Of course, I updated the BIOS, but I haven't had the problem that some other people have. I guess it just varies by a computer or model or whatever.
Yeah. Interesting. That's very, very interesting. Thanks, Zach. That's good to hear.
All right. Good day.
And congratulations on not having the problem. That's always a big one. We're always kind of delighted when people don't actually have a problem.
And we've sort of joked for several years now that you can't call them laptops anymore. They've been too hot to put on your lap for a long time.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
They're notebooks.
Well, with the new systems, the Atom processors and the Ion processors, that may change.
Yeah, the heat's back down, but then your speed is back down, too.
Well, then your speed is back down. But really, if what you're doing is some of the more simple stuff, or if you're one of those people who does everything in Google Docs, doesn't matter how fast your machine is. All right, our next caller is Dave. Where are you calling from, Dave?
Dave, I'm from Bloomfield.
Bloomfield. And how are things in beautiful Bloomfield?
Well, they're great, but part of my problem is the fact that I can't get DSL or cable connectivity to the Internet, so I'm using a USB modem, Verizon USB modem, like a cell connection.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
And I lost connectivity now. My antivirus program, my Avast Internet Security, will connect and update and get new definitions, but both Firefox and Internet Explorer show that a proxy server is not working and it won't connect me to the Internet. Any ideas where I look for a solution?
Yeah, make sure you're not using a proxy server. I don't think you need to be connected to a proxy server. So if you've told Firefox that it should look for a proxy server, tell it no proxy.
Is a proxy server the same thing as a router?
Nope. A proxy server is a separate box that sits on your network that sits between you and the Internet. And it's one of the things that they put up in businesses, or individuals are now putting them up, to block certain places from their kids or their employees, that sort of thing. For example, Greece Central School District has a proxy server that won't let you get to Facebook.
Or YouTube.
Or any of the things they don't want the kids to go to, which is perfectly fair. And perfectly acceptable, but that's how it works. So if you're not actually running that one of those separate boxes called a proxy server, then you tell it no proxy server.
My daughter has an Apple. She can connect to the Internet just fine.
Yep, because she did not tell Firefox to look for a proxy server.
So I actually have to go into the settings of my Internet program and change something there, get rid of this proxy server.
Well, it depends on where you installed it. If you installed it, there's several places you can tell the system it has a proxy server. One is in the Internet settings, and one is in each individual program. Firefox has a setting for proxy.
I can't even Google for proxies. Because the kids will use a proxy server to get past the proxy server.
Right.
So I can't even Google for proxy.
It's either in the Internet settings themselves, or in the... Firefox has a setting for proxy server. Internet Explorer has a setting for proxy server. So you got to look in all three places, tell all three of them no proxy server, and you should be good to go. We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Join us on Sundays 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 for Big Road Blues, an exploration of vintage blues spanning the 1920s through the 1970s. Tune in to Big Road Blues with host Jeff Harris as he digs deep into blues history, spotlighting blues legends and forgotten blues heroes. Along the way, he'll fill you in on the stories and history behind the music. That's Big Road Blues every Sunday, 5 to 7 on Jazz 90.1 with your host, Jeff Harris.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Agape Physical Therapy, with locations in Brockport, Chi-Lai, Gates, and Webster. Agape Physical Therapy offers customized exercise programs for those who suffer with arthritis, back, knee, and neck pain. Each of Agape Physical Therapy's four locations stresses a group approach to treatment and is staffed with a doctor of physical therapy or a McKenzie specialist to ensure the most effective therapy. For more information about Agape Physical Therapy, you may call 637-0790 or visit agapephysicaltherapy.com.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Frontier Communications. Frontier Communications offers high-speed internet with the reliability and support you've come to expect from Frontier. For more information, you can visit www.frontiernet.net.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have sent children into fits of rage.
I am responsible for a child's speech impediment.
I am the reason a child can't read.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
If you dig swingin' big bands, Jazz 90.1 has got an afternoon for you, presenting the rebroadcast of the Complete Jazz Heritage Series featuring the United States Air Force's Airmen of Note Big Band with guest New York voices in the first hour, Joey DeFrancesco in the second hour, and Gary Simoleon in the third. No matter where you are, don't miss these outstanding jazz broadcasts.
Monday, July 5th, from noon until 3 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Phil Dodd. Please join me weekdays from noon to 3 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we're celebrating the Freedom Edition of Soundbites. Freedom! Or, for those of you who are probably not paying attention to us, because I'm sure there's a soccer game on, excuse me, a football game on now. Go!
Yeah. Well, South Africa's out, so they should stop playing the stupid thing, shouldn't they?
He's carrying over to the other mics.
No, they didn't stop playing.
Can
it.
I do rebreathing?
There goes Robin. I'm waiting.
I read.
I am going to get nailed big time. You know that.
I read an.
I don't care if he's out in some Caribbean.
I'm sure
whatever,
he heard
or
it.
Sitting home.
Yeah. I read an interesting essay that the word soccer is British.
And football is everybody else.
Well,
F-U-T-B-O-L, football.
Yeah, when
football.
In the mid-1800s, when they were setting up the Football Association, they had rugby football, and then they had this other football that they were working out creating the rules for. And so they created the... the FAA, Football Association, and people liked abbreviation, so they just took a couple letters out of association and made soccer. So it isn't us Americans that made the word soccer.
There is no R in association.
Well, you know how the Brits love to throw. No, it's S-O-S-O-C-C, A-S-S-O-C-C, and so the Brits like to throw letters in here and there. So it was an interesting essay that in some parts of the world it's soccer, in some parts of the world it's football, but in England it has been soccer or football
interchangeably
from the beginning.
Right. Well, here we go. Just 6 days after the iPhone 4's launch, a pair of Maryland residents have sued Apple and AT&T, alleging that the smartphone's defective antenna design drops calls and can't hold a strong signal. The lawsuit filed in federal court in Maryland claimed Apple knowingly sold defective phones and broke its warranty promises. The lawsuit also leveled 7 additional charges against Apple and AT&T, including general negligence, deceptive trade practices, fraud, and misrepresentation. Kevin McCaffrey and Linda Rinn pre-ordered 2 iPhone 4s each from AT&T on June 15th, but after receiving their phones on June 24th and 28th, respectively, they experienced dropped calls because of the device's antenna design, the suit alleged. Plaintiffs are left with a device that cannot be used for the normal purpose and in the normal manner in which such devices are intended to be used, read the lawsuit. Plaintiffs are unable to return the phone without incurring a substantial restocking fee. The lawsuit seeks class action status, a move that, if granted, would allow any U.S. iPhone 4 owner to join the case. Their lawsuit is the first stemming from complaints about substandard iPhone call reception, which started last week when the new phone reached users. Almost immediately, owners reported that their phones would lose a signal or that the signal indicator would show a weakened signal when the smartphone was gripped in a certain way, which we call the normal way every freaking buddy on the planet holds their phone. Especially if it was held in the left hand. Hardware experts believe that holding the iPhone can bridge the two antennae embedded in the steel band that encircles the device, lowering signal strength and changing their ability to receive and transmit signals at the designated frequencies. McCaffrey and Wynn's lawsuit cited several of the accounts on the internet of the reception problems, as well as email statements allegedly made by Apple CEO Steve Jobs to users and a leaked script for Apple support technicians that ordered them not to offer warranty service for the flaw, not to give anybody free bumpers. Basically, what they're saying is we're not in the business of customer support. And, of course, they're not, actually. We'll talk about that in a minute. The suit demanded Apple and AT&T pay compensatory and punitive damages and that Apple be barred from selling more iPhone 4s until it had repaired the design and or manufacture defect. A friend of mine, who's a radio guy, thinks it might be related to which frequency your phone uses. There are two different radios in the iPhone 4 cell phone signals. And what he's saying is, and I don't know enough about radio to tell you which one is which, but one's a short signal and one's a long signal, a long wavelength. And he's saying that it may happen on one but not on the other. So it would depend on where you are and which radio you're actually connected to the cell tower with as to whether or not you will experience this problem. So our question from you, are you experiencing the problem? And if so, or even if not, even if you don't even have an iPhone, if you had one, would you join a class action lawsuit against Apple? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. And we've been seeing all of these things all over the internet. Apple's not taking care of their customers. Yeah, Apple's taking excellent care of their customers. Because stop and think for a minute. Who is their customer? It's the same as any publicly held corporation. Their customer is the shareholder. It's not the guy who buys the phone. It's the guy who buys the stock.
Yep.
And so they're protecting their customer not admitting to any fault. That's exactly, they're doing exactly what a company should do. And if you are upset by the fact that you're not actually one of Apple's customers, sell your iPhone, buy some stock. That's the only way you'll ever be a real customer of any corporation that is publicly traded.
Droid.
Or you can buy a
droid.
And give them more than a couple of days after the thing comes out.
Well, it's not that they aren't fixing it right away. It's that they're denying there's a problem. It's very difficult to get a problem fixed when you deny there's a problem.
Yeah. One of their first responses was
holding it improperly.
Right, the first response was don't hold it that way. One of the first official responses is that all cell phones have this problem. And if you squeeze them too tight, if you touch the antennas, it screws up reception.
Well, I'll tell you what. I took my droid outside to give it, you know, the best thing. I had four bars. I cupped it in every conceivable manner. I folded my body over it, which if you've ever seen me is quite a sight to see watching me do that. I couldn't get it to lose a bar.
Do we have any pictures of that?
No. I couldn't get it to lose a single bar.
Do you know where the antenna is?
I cupped it everywhere. And right, it's across the bottom, and I cupped that too.
Yeah. Is there metal there, or is it plastic?
No, it's all plastic, and that's why I don't have the problem.
Yeah.
So it's not every cell phone. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Not every cell phone.
Every cell phone you can touch the antenna on.
Oh, okay. All right.
And one of the blogs I was reading was talking about the original StarTAC phone from Motorola, that really, really tiny phone.
Yeah.
If you remember cell phones from just, 2-3 years ago, they had antenna that you had to pull out of the phone to make your call. And so many people weren't bothering to pull the antenna out and then calling Motorola tech support saying, why isn't my phone working, that they started putting the antenna in the phone so that if you didn't pull it out, you still got some sort of an antenna. And then that has eventually led to where we are now, where there is no external antenna coming out of the phone.
Right. And of course, they're now saying you can just you can fix it instead of buying the $30 bumpers. If you buy the $1 LiveStrong bracelet, not only do you give money to a really, really good cause, but then 30 seconds with a pair of scissors or an X-Acto knife
to cut
cutting holes in strategic places, and suddenly you've got a bumper, bumper.
Well, yeah. I got to admit, I told you guys last night.
Yeah, Dave.
It's my daughter's fault. I can blame it truly on my daughter.
Come to the dark side. We have cookies.
I finally moved over from just a plain phone, moved up to a 3G phone with a touch screen. I didn't go the data plan, the $29.90. What is it, $29.99?
Yep. Right.
Stuck with the $10 one.
You've got a feature phone.
Yes, I got a feature phone, which I got to admit, thanks to my daughter, I really like the touch screen. And some of the features on it, it is, getting used to it. I don't do any more butt dialing. And it's nice with the touch screen, though. And I can see these different apps, which I use, the calculator and the notepad, out on here. And it's like, yeah, I do like it.
See? There is no one more fervently religious than a convert.
Yep. I gotta bet. I say, but it wound up getting a super deal on it. And it's the reason I did it. Yeah, granted, right. It's still gonna cost me the extra $10 a month. But in the same token, because then I wound up going to what they call a business plan now, because we got 5 lines.
Right.
So, had benefits there. So that's how I'm justifying it.
Yeah, right. Justifying it to yourself.
See, that's the neat thing nowadays. Remember before I used to get vetoed?
Right.
I don't get vetoed anymore.
Well, that's right. You don't get vetoed anymore.
I sit there and I take votes, and usually I win.
You win.
The dogs don't argue with me.
The dogs don't get a vote.
They still
want to have biscuits. Right. I'm worried about you if you ever actually lose the vote.
Yeah, if we do.
Well, he's taking on a partner soon. There'll be someone else voting.
That's true about some stuff.
So senior partner outranks junior partner, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Age.
Yeah.
Age.
That's why I said
that's right.
Senior partner.
And really senior. Oh, sorry. Jim Tay, one of our friends, Tayville in Second Life, just sent me a tweet based on my goal earlier. He said, "You're missing the horns."
I thought that's what you were doing. Did you see the Vuvuzela that Hyundai built? 110 feet long, powered by an electric a generator, and blasted the whole city.
Oh, yep. One thing I do have to say, though, is I got to put a shout-out to our friend Karen Dory.
Yeah, of course.
Is back in the hospital again. She's due to get out Sunday. Back, but wish her all the best and speedy recovery, and can't wait to see you back in Second Life. Kind of missed her.
Yep, yes, we do. Get well soon. You're in our prayers. I do have an app on my Droid that gives me Airphone and a couple of other things, including the Vuvuzela. Vuvuzela. I should be able to say that word. It was my stripper name, by the way.
Yeah.
In case you didn't know. All right, our next caller is BT.
Howdy.
Tony.
No, BT.
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 Yep. That's what he said.
And then I said howdy.
Oh, howdy. Where are you calling from?
City of Rochester.
Rochester, New York.
Yep.
Hub
Welcome
of civilization
to the U.S.
in the Western
well, thank
world.
You.
What can we do to make you happier than you are right now?
Oh, gosh. You could tell me how I can get email again. I've got a Sony Vaio, which is about 7 years old, so it's kind of antique-y. I had a total system crash about 4 or 5 months ago. And had to do a system recovery. I had the CDs
right
to do that. And since then, it keeps on crashing every week or so. And when it's not doing that, it won't let me get email through Outlook Express. And I've called Time Warner and everything, and they say it's a browser problem. They say everything. Everything's correct on their part. They pinged it and everything, and it's looking good. But something on my machine or something is not allowing.
What program do you use to get to your email?
Outlook Express.
Okay.
Number 6, is that?
That still shouldn't be a problem,
okay.
But that's not a browser. So anyway, here's the deal.
Does your browser work? Can you get to web pages?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So the computer is connected and working.
Then where the problem lies, clearly seems to be at least, One of the when you set up Outlook Express to get to your email,
mm-hmm.
you have to give it a number of things. You have to give it your email address, your password, and the correct server from which to get mail, and the correct server to which to send mail. And you have to tell it all kinds of things about those servers, how they accept mail, all kinds of other things.
Can you?
You should be able to find information on that on Time Warner's website.
Oh, okay. I think we went, because I talked to one of the techs, and I think we went through all that. And
can you send?
And everything was square.
Can you send and not receive, or can you receive and not send, or does neither work either way?
Either one. I go to sign on, and I get a says problem logging onto your mail server. Password was rejected. Account server, you know, pop server, blah blah blah.
Yeah, for Time Warner
name or password.
Yeah, for the Time Warner, you're here in Rochester, right?
Yes.
Yeah, the server should be pop-server.rochester.rr.com and smtp-server.rochester.rr.com.
And you use one or the other.
Oh, okay.
Pop for in and SMTP for out.
They only do pop mail?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate pop mail.
All right, so
it's pop. Dash.
Right. It's the dash or the hyphen. It's not the underscore. So you have to have the right symbol there.
POP dash server.
Mm-hmm.
Dot
Rochester dot RR dot com.
Okay.
And you've got to make it.
And that's the incoming server.
Right.
And outgoing is.
SMTP. Simple mail transfer protocol. I have to make sure I do it right.
Yeah.
Because SMPT works, SMTP won't.
Oh, okay.
No, the other way around. Yeah. Simple Mail Transfer Protocol, SMTP, hyphen server, .rochester.ir.com.
Okay.
One thing to test is go to web browser, Firefox, Internet Explorer, whatever, and go to webmail.rochester.ir.com and log into your webmail account.
That's the only way I can get it is I go to like Time Warner's site and I
right. That's what he's talking about.
Right.
So that works. So that means the username and password you're typing in are correct, which implies that the password that's typed into Outlook Express is incorrect.
Oh, okay.
So delete that password and type it again.
Oh, okay. And the other thing is
We got to take a break.
Oh, no problem.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Hi, this is Tom Pethick. Please join me every Monday evening from 6 to 9 as we take a journey into jazz. We'll hear music from homegrown jazz musicians such as vibist Joe Locke and the late legendary saxophonist Joe Romano. And, of course, we'll hear music from today's new artists. That's Monday evenings from 6 to 9. Right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
If you dig swingin' big bands, Jazz 90.1 has got an afternoon for you, presenting the rebroadcast of the Complete Jazz Heritage Series, featuring the United States Air Force's Airmen of Note Big Band, with guest New York voices in the first hour, Joey DeFrancesco in the second hour, and Gary Simoleon in the third. No matter where you are, don't miss these outstanding jazz broadcasts.
Monday, July 5th, from noon until 3 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do New York a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA, America's wireless companies, and the National Safety Council.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Frontier Communications. Frontier Communications offers high-speed internet with the reliability and support you've come to expect from Frontier. For more information, you can visit www.frontiernet.net.
Hi, this is Jeff Harris. Join me every Sunday night from 5 to 7 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we continue to be sound bites.
And I'm going to put a couple shameless plugs in there. Let me turn that off.
Aimless plugs?
Shameless.
Oh, all right.
Shameless. I know you're getting a little old.
A couple of aimless plugs.
You want me to turn up? Should I turn up your
chickens,
headphones?
Ducks.
Probably all that screaming that you did. Oh. Your ear.
Sorry.
No, two things. One, folks are out and about. I'm going to be, I got to put a shameless plug in, working the Kiwanis booth tomorrow at the Rondacoit festivities for the 4th of July from 4 to 7. So if you get a chance, come on over to the Kiwanis Club. You know, I'm Kiwanin with the Rondacoit
Will you
group.
Be in the... Hit the target and drop Dave into the water tank?
No, I am working.
Because I'd be there if it was that.
No, I'm working.
Ariel would be there, no question.
The pole tabs. Yeah, my granddaughter's here with me today. And the other thing is I'm starting.
She's the one that should be there with the mermaid costume, right?
There you go.
I won't go there. Anyways, I'm going to.
How often in your life have you had to answer that one?
It was a popular movie that year.
Another shameless plug that I'm going to put in that is that I'm coming back on the air. As a matter of fact, this Thursday, I will be doing the Thursday shift from 6 to 9. So if you folks haven't listened to jazz and only listened to sound bites, please do me a favor. Write down on your calendars. Give me a listen. I'm also looking for input from folks because, like I say, I want to try to do a different type of jazz. Rob, he's not listening anyways. Yeah. So, but, you know, I want to do all upbeat stuff. And I'm looking for different artists and suggestions from folks that are all upbeat stuff. And, you know, and after going to the Jazz Fest, you know, I mean, this just got me into jazz that
there
much more. Because I tell you, I had 1 week of fun. Literally, for the whole week, listening to some great jazz, R&B. It was a great mixture. So, just those two plugs.
There you go.
Now you can do news.
Thank you. Here's the news. And we're back to it again. Dell deliberately shipped millions of PCs that it knew to be faulty, according to recently unsealed court papers. The three-year-old documents obtained by the New York Times show that at least 11.8 million Dell Optiplex PCs, which shipped between May 2003 and July 2005, were at risk of failure from faulty capacitors. They relate to a civil case filed against the company in the North Carolina Federal District Court by web hosting company Advanced Internet Technologies. The capacitors, say the paper, were supplied by vendors including Japan's Nichicon and were used by other PC vendors too, including HP and Apple. But they show Dell was most affected. According to the documents, shortly after problems started emerging, Dell was warned by a consultant that the machines were 10 times as likely to fail as had been initially estimated by Dell. An internal Dell study also showed the PCs containing the suspect capacitors had a 97% fail rate. I don't know how you get 10 times more likely than 97%, but that's why I'm not a statistician. But not only did the company not recall them, said the New York Times, sales staff were told to conceal the problems. Emails show them being told not to bring problems to customers' attention. Dell looked like one of the best players on the block at one time, but has declined over the past few years. In 2005, it announced that it was taking a $300 million charge related in part to the faulty capacitors. Did you own one of those faulty Dells? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. This is why I always, always tell people buy locally. Go to somebody like Dave or Steve, where you've got a face to look at and they care about every individual customer because that's their reputation. Yeah. If Dell loses one out of 200 million customers, they don't honestly care.
Yeah. Well, the big problem with this capacitor issue, because we faced it as well in the Apple world, is that once the warranty expires, you know, what are you going to do? If you have a steady enough hand, you can remove and replace on the iMacs that have been affected by this. There's 25 different capacitors that can blow. We've got an electrician that fixed his own, and he said it takes about 2 hours of labor. mm-hmm. With a very, very steady hand to yes. unsolder and resolder 25 capacitors.
Right.
So you're looking at several hundred dollars to repair an out-of-warranty product. And it's very annoying.
And that's also very tricky, too, because, like yeah. you say...
On multi-layer boards?
Yes, if you sit there and put that soldering iron too long on a trace, you yep. could lift the whole trace, and there goes the whole multi-board.
I tried doing one myself.
It isn't an art.
Found out my soldering iron's not hot enough, so I got to buy a hotter one.
My brother does it. I mean, he does yeah. that for electronics for a living. And he's good at it, but he's done it for over 20-some-odd years.
And that's sort of the joke in the service department, that robots are cheaper than people. It's cheaper to build a new machine with a robot than it is to fix an old machine with a guy in a soldering iron.
Oh, right. yeah. And nowadays, you know, it's, like you say, for the parts and everything yeah. else, the labor.
I know a couple of people in the, single-person PC repair shops that have had a lot of trouble with this because their computers they sell come back in 2 or 3 years. The warranty's now expired, and, they can't fix it. So they try to be reasonable. I can build a new computer for you, but the customer doesn't want to hear that. They
I've
want
been seeing
for
a lot
free.
Of e-machines. A lot yeah. of e-machines coming in.
This
and
was an industry-wide, in fact, multi-industry-wide plague of yeah. bad capacitors.
Yeah, and they'd sit there. And what we're talking about, folks, is, and it's easy to do, if you want to actually see if you've got any, without doing any harm to your machine, if you were to take the side off your computer.
Preferably when it's turned off.
Yes, when it's turned off, you can sit there with a flashlight and just look at it. And what these capacitors look like is they're silver on the top. And they usually either have a V or a K design in them.
I found the X's
or,
will
or the X's,
most, yeah.
the X's too. There's the V, the K, and the X. And what happens is they literally swell. Instead of being flat, you will literally see them puff up, and sometimes they'll start leaking. That's what they're designed to do.
Right, it's a design safety feature so they don't explode.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, actually started out in as industrial espionage. That a company stole a formula for capacitors, but apparently didn't steal enough of the formula,
mm-hmm.
and flooded the market with really, really cheap capacitors. And so everybody bought them for any electronic device. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out in a couple of years that they start failing because they're too cheap.
Substandard, China.
It's got a huge Wikipedia article on it, too. The capacitor plague, they call it there.
Mm-hmm. I think they were from China, and as we all know, China quite often will take the shortcut as opposed to doing something with quality, just like a lot of the toys have been recalled because of lead content and these other things. They don't care over
right.
there.
They're and just- if you want to see what a capacitor looks like, that Wikipedia article on capacitor plague, they're essentially little black barrels with silver tops.
Mm-hmm.
And as Dave said, those tops should be flat. And if they're not,
you can, like I say, with the computer turned off, still plugged in, so you're not going to short anything, you can look at just a flashlight and look around. You'll see these little cylinders. They're maybe about a half an inch to maybe 3/4 inch tall. And they can be very, very in sizes, as far as diameter. But you'll see these silver tops, and you're looking for, they should all be nice and flat. Quite often, we get a lot that are.
I was digging around the internet looking for a place to buy these capacitors for the iMac, and I finally found a company and bought a pack of them. And they're like $1 a piece, so they're not that expensive,
yeah.
Unless you're building a computer and millions of computers a day, and then $1 a piece is a whole lot of money.
So if you can get one for 99 cents
yeah.
and you use, 100 million a day, do the math.
That's a huge savings, yeah.
Right.
So I bought some on the internet, and they show up at the office, and they're from Rochester. So there's a guy in town that sells capacitors if you want to do it yourself.
Thank you, guy in town. Call us up and let us know who you are. Our next caller is Gil. Where are you calling from, Gil?
Oh, from Webster or Ebster now.
Ebster, New York. And what can E do for you?
Life is still is worth living out.
No, I suspect life would be earth living.
Yes, probably. you may be right.
No W's for you guys.
No W's.
No W's.
No W for
that
you.
Would be the FUD syndrome, right?
Right.
Well, so just to comment on the capacitors, there are capacitors and there are capacitors, but it is really a good idea. You can save yourself a lot of grief by doing what Dave said, which is look for the swollen tops and so forth.
Before it fails completely.
Before it fails, yeah. Because once it fails, you never know what you're also going to lose because of the fact that it failed. But another sign that you can look for is sometimes when these capacitors vent, they create a small film of white powder around the capacitor on the board or something like that. So if you're pretty eagle-eyed or can see that little white film, you're perhaps in the region of an impending doom. So it's better to chop it off at the knees before they actually fail. When they fail, of course, they stop functioning, and they can take some other things with them. One more comment about the capacitors that you may attempt to buy and replace the ones that have failed or will fail. There are capacitors and there are capacitors, but one of the characteristics of some of these modern computer boards is that they use what are called low ESR capacitors. And what that means is that the capacitor doesn't look like just a capacitor. It looks like a capacitor with a very tiny resistor in series with it. And the tinier the resistor, the more pure the capacitor is. And if you get ones that are not so pure, they don't work so well. So, that's something that you can replace the capacitors and find out that, it fails every once in a while, and the mystery would go on and on.
Right.
And it's simply the fact that the capacitor ESR may not be low enough, and you may be getting little spikes and things that leak through and so forth. So.
Excellent point, Gil. So the moral of that story is pay an expert to do their job.
That's it. Probably you may just be better off if you see a board going, if you have no other recourse, just buy another board before it wrecks the rest of your components. And, trying to replace it is, mm-hmm. even for the experts, not necessarily an easy job. Yep. So I did have a question, believe it or not.
Ah, okay.
And it wasn't about Ebster or anything like that.
Right.
I have, like most people, tons and tons of programs, and I just wondered whether you had any overall advice about the myriad of updates that come, and create thousands of little files that are updates back to the dawn of the universe, I guess. And, do we keep them all? Do we not keep them all? Which ones can we delete?
Well, the real problem is most programs look at those file lists to determine whether or not you've already installed that update.
So a lot of times it's just a small 2 or 3K receipt file rather than the whole 30, 40 meg installer file.
Okay. Right. Generally...
And that's if you do automatic installs.
Right.
If you do a manual install where you download an installer and then install it, you can usually pretty safely delete that installer you downloaded.
Right. You'll still get the receipt somewhere, but you won't have to keep the entire big file that you downloaded.
Yeah, we used to always recommend keep all your downloads because over a modem it was so slow to download it again. But now it's with the broadband internet, it's easier to download it again, and you'll probably get a newer version if you ever do need it.
Right. Except for Dave out in Bloomfield, of course, who can't get either
can't get
cable
broadband,
or DSL.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, well, they'll have to find a way to mail bits by letter, I guess, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a CD or something.
They used to do that, too.
Yep.
You used to have barcodes in magazines, and you could buy a cheap or free scanner. Remember the QCAT?
Yep.
The mouse, that little mouse.
Q-Mouse.
Q-Mouse.
QCAT, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and they were free, and you could then scan in whatever you needed, and you got stuff that way. That was very cool, actually.
Well, I think everybody should go back to loading programs by toggle switches on front panels.
Yeah. Used to do that.
Much
been
more
there.
Fun, and who needs entertainment at
punch
that point?
Cards or
exactly.
Tape.
No, toggle switches were even tougher. I used to own a Cosmec VIP, which is a tiny little one single board computer. On one side were all the components. On the other side was a hex keypad. Every time I plugged it in, I had to program the entire thing in hex to do whatever I wanted to do. And then if I unplugged it, I had to reprogram it when I plugged it back in again. Man, oh, man, that was fun to play with.
Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Hey, it increased your manual dexterity. Look how agile you are now.
Yeah, no, I was agile because it did increase my manual dexterity. Now I have arthritis.
Right.
Now I just club the keyboard with my elbows. All right, Gil, thanks.
Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Have fun. Yeah, those were the days, man, when we were excited to get something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How many people spent days trying to get a single TRS-80 tape of anything to actually load on their system?
Yep.
And then once you had the volume on your tape recorder adjusted just right and everything else adjusted just right, God forbid anybody touch that tape recorder. Anybody, for any reason.
Death.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work on the old Honeywell systems with punch cards at Kodak. And then one of the other first real, you know, modern computers that I got to work on was the old Trash 80.
Right.
Went around with the 8K or the 8.5-inch floppies or the 8-inch floppies.
Right.
Carrying those around with 32K on those and programming everything in BASIC.
Right.
Seems like a lifetime ago.
It was. And it was an amazing different thing. I actually had a Cosmac VIP. No, the Cosmac VIP I talked about. I also had the Jupiter Ace, which was like the Sinclair.
Mm-hmm.
The little Sinclair computers, and except it programmed in Forth.
Ooh.
And I could hook it up to my tape recorder and load and save programs on that thing all day long. I had the most fun with that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the one thing folks, you know, are so soon to forget.
Well, and nobody programs anymore. I mean, it used to be every computer you got had a version of BASIC with it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you were on a Mac, you got HyperCard.
Yep.
So people could do their own programming and have their own fun and do their own stuff. Now, if you're lucky, under Linux, you get a C compiler. But there's no entry level. It used to be every machine came with a free entry level programming language.
And now you get Perl and Python and PHP.
Right.
And no one knows what any of those acronyms mean. What happened to good old BASIC? What happened to BASIC? It became Visual Basic Studio.
Well, Microsoft killed it on the Apple computers. That we know that. But nobody, you know, it used to be you got one free so you could play around and enjoy your own machine. Now, apparently, everybody assumes you're too stupid to program, and so you don't get a programming language. All right, and of course, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the great and exciting member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 appreciates your support through membership. But did you know you can support Jazz 90.1 in other ways as well? For example, by donating your old vehicle. When you donate your old vehicle to Jazz 90.1, we receive cash and you get the tax deduction. We even come pick it up. To find out more, call 966-5299. When the time comes to change vehicles, think of Jazz 90.1 and call 966-5299. Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Every day, you can help good things happen. Claudia, a local health worker in Nicaragua, helped save 6 children from pneumonia. Rosina in Bangladesh helped save 10 children from diarrhea. Aster in Ethiopia helped save 20 from malaria. And Salif in Mali helped save 30 from the effects of malnutrition. Help one, save many. Visit goodgoes.org to find all the ways you can help the good go further. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Olivia Fox. You know, there are tons of social networks on the web, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living donor, or if you are someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com.
When every moment matters and a life is saved, when someone gives blood, when a hand reaches out, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Down the street, across the country, around the world, you help save the day. Every day. You can help today. Support your local Red Cross.
When you underwrite the programming of Jazz 90.1, you make your business known to people who enjoy jazz as much as you do. Your on-air message is short and tasteful, making it easy to remember, with basic information about your business, including how to reach you. Underwriting is economical, too. To find out more about underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We were just talking about the Apple kerfuffle again, and Steve Gibson was weighing in. What did he say?
Kerfuffle?
Kerfuffle, yeah. Steve Gibson.
What is a kerfuffle?
A to-do, a contretemps.
Ooh. How elite.
This whole cluster business that's going on with...
screwed up mess is better.
Yeah, okay, that works.
Works better for me.
Sure. So he's saying the problem is the bars. And in fact, he's right, you know.
Yeah. You think you got five bars on your phone that each one is 20% out of 100% signal strength, but it doesn't work that way. You can get five bars when you have 5% signal strength. So the Apple,
right.
That goes back to the formula that Apple said they were using, that they're showing the bars differently than, and it isn't really signal strength, it's signal to noise ratio.
Right.
And when you bridge those two antennas, you now have 100% noise.
Right. And what Apple is now saying is, and they said they were shocked to discover this, by the way. They said this right on their site. They were shocked to discover that what they have done is used an incorrect formula to tell you how many bars you have. And in fact, they've been giving everybody two bars too many. See, they were given an algorithm to use from AT&T and decided not to use it. Instead, used a different algorithm, which is wrong. So they're going to push out an update that gives everybody the AT&T bars, which means now everybody's going to be angry because suddenly they've got fewer bars. And they think that means lower signal strength.
Right. It's lower noise. Well, higher noise to signal.
Higher noise to signal. And still, on the other hand, that doesn't help with the problem with the antennas, because when those bars drop to zero, your call drops.
Right.
So it doesn't matter how much is noise and how much is signal, you're still dropping calls when you bridge those antennas.
And the bars indicate how well your phone hears the tower.
Right.
It has nothing to do with how well the tower hears you when you're making a call.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like how fast is your modem. A lot of people look at that number that comes up, and that's back in the day, that used to be the speed between you and your modem, not the speed of your modem
to the other side.
All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave. Where are you calling from, Dave?
Dave, I'm sorry, Rochester.
And what can we do for you?
A question for Steve. I have a problem with my trash on the Snow Leopard. When I put something in the trash, it tells me it wants to delete it right away. It doesn't allow it to be left in the trash. And I have looked up some information on the internet, and I find that, you know, I found out that this may have something to do with my, my home folder, and they gave, had some scripts to run and things under the terminal program, but nothing seems to get rid of this problem. Any ideas?
That usually happens when you're on a server, and the server doesn't have its own trash. So when you delete something, it deletes it immediately.
Well, is that also true of any sort of attached device like a USB thumb drive or any of that?
It shouldn't be, no. Every device has its own trash folder, which confuses people because when they stick, say, a flash drive in and the trash can bulges, and they remove the flash drive and the trash can unbulges, because the file is in the trash of that drive, not of the hard drive. But you can also simulate's not the word I want. You can also run into that problem if you're deleting files you don't own. So it's somebody else's file. It has to delete it immediately. So I would suggest you run the permission repair.
Oh, okay.
And see if that clears up the issue.
In addition, isn't there a setting in the trash that says delete immediately?
No.
Really?
No. It's the trash fills up until the hard drive is full, and you manually empty it.
Now, can't you do control delete or splat delete or cloverleaf J left elbow 32 delete or something?
There's a move to trash keyboard command that just moves it to the trash. But the trash never deletes itself, never empties until you manually tell it to empty.
Huh.
That's not how it used to be. It used to empty whenever it needed to.
That's special.
When the disk started getting full. But that was back when we had, you know, 1 meg floppy disks, and
this relates. Well, this also relates to all the people who use the trash as a folder,
right? So you can always open the trash and take things out later on. You realize you didn't mean to trash, and that's one of the reasons they never empty the trash. They leave it up to you to empty the trash, and then you go, "Oh, there was something in there I wanted."
Too late now.
Oh, I had a customer that did that, and I said, because you know they asked me to clean up the machine. And when they got back, he said, "Wait a minute, everything in my trash is gone." "Yeah, we clean everything out of your machine." "Well, I was saving stuff in there."
No.
The trash is not
the trash.
A saving place.
Yep.
It's a deleting place.
Oh.
Well, all right, then you got to do what Steve says because.
Okay.
In Disk Utility, in the Utilities folder, run the repair permissions on that drive.
All righty. All right, thanks. I'm surprised that there's no way to just immediately delete something, like to hold a splat key or something else down. Because I can do that under Linux. I can even do that under Windows. So not the splat key, of course, because we have real keyboards. All right, back
real
to
men
the phone.
Click twice.
Real men don't think twice. We just delete it, everything. It's gone. Forget it.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Mike. Where are you calling from, Mike?
Calling from Akron.
Akron, New York, or Akron, Ohio?
Akron, New York.
Oh.
New York. Got a question for you guys regarding a router. I'm trying to use a program called EchoLink. It's for ham radios that you can use online. And I'm trying to do port forwarding through my router. And I figured it out going through the applications and gaming. The problem I'm having is when I set it up for two specific ports, I can only use one IPv4 address. It ends in like, it's like a 192.168.1.103. If I want to put in, say, like my laptop, which is a 104, it won't let you do that. And I'm just trying to find out if there's a way around that.
What brand router do you have?
It's a Linksys WRT54G.
Yeah, you should be able to set that to any of the 192.168 ranges.
Right, and I can do it for the one IP address that ends in 103. That would be my desktop. Where my laptop ends in 104, but then it says it's a configuration problem. It won't let you do it.
Are you trying to change the address of the computer or the range of addresses of the router?
The forwarding ranges of the router. I'm doing like a start and end port range, and then I'm just putting in the IP address.
Well, that sounds,
IP address.
Yeah, that sounds like a limitation of the router itself.
Right, because it comes off like port overlap occurred. When you try to do like to a 103 and then a 104, it's a port overlap.
Well,
like
yeah,
I can only port forward to one computer to one IP address.
Right. If you're forwarding ports 100 to 150 to IP 103, then you can't forward ports 140 to 150 to IP 104 because that forwarding overlaps.
Okay, so there's no way around that.
You have to forward to one
laptop. I would have to go in and change that to the laptop.
Right. It can't forward traffic to two computers. It can only forward traffic to one computer.
Okay, so I have to change it then each time I switch from a desktop to a laptop then.
Right.
Okay, because it's one program, and you can run it on different machines, but it's very specific on two specific ports you have to forward.
Right.
So I can only use those two ports because that's what the program uses.
And you can't change those ports in the program?
No, I can't.
Because that's the one workaround. I want to run a web server on two computers. So on one computer, I'll use port 80, and on the other computer, I'll use port 8080 for web services.
Okay.
And then I can forward two ports to two different computers for the same traffic.
Right. Okay.
Round three.
Well, at least I know how it's what's going on here.
Yep.
Thank you very much for your help.
Sorry, Mike.
Yep.
This is one of the things.
Theoretically, if he's not using both computers at the same time, he can give each computer the same IP address, and whatever computer is turned on will have 103.
Right.
And as long as the other computer is not turned on, too.
Right.
Or also.
Right. Simultaneously. But this is one of the things that really makes me angry these days, is people who insist on specific ports and insist on specific things as if they own your computer.
Well, it's easier than random ports. You ever try to port forward the VNC? It uses a random port from 5900 to, what, 65,000?
Yeah. I know there's no way around it. It just angers me. All right, our next caller is Cindy. Where are you calling from, Cindy?
Well, I'm Cindy from Queensbury, but today I'm in Lake Luzerne.
Wow.
Lady gets around.
Yep.
Lake Luzerne where? Switzerland?
Lake Luzerne, New York.
Oh, New York.
It's just on the other side of a small mountain.
Welcome to the U.S.
The gateway to the Adirondacks.
I believe Lake Luzerne was named after Lucerne, Switzerland.
Right. All right. What do you? Are you ever home? God love you. You're a traveling kind of gal. Good for you. What can we do for you, Cindy?
Well, I have Firefox. Mm-hmm. And every time I turn on my computer, I turn on Juice to get my latest podcast. And every single time I have to do the user account control, do you want to allow the following program from an unknown publisher to make changes to the computer? Every single time I turn Juice on, even though every time I've turned the computer on since I bought it, I have said yes.
There's no always remember checkbox you can check
under Windows.
No. There's a thing, change when these notifications appear, but that's for the whole system. I'd have to make it less secure for the whole system. I just want to say, don't ask me that for this one. Now, I see that there are set default programs, and I wonder if that's it, but I don't see a way to make them default. This is probably, I don't know, this is probably a Windows 7. And I'm not sure if the set your default program, I think, is a Windows 7 thing, but the do you want to allow the following? That's definitely Firefox, because it never happened when I had, I don't think it is Firefox now that I think it happened as soon as I, because it's got that blue and yellow shield that I think is Windows 7.
I found a tech note on how to use the compatibility toolkit to allow a single program through UAC. I'll post that link in a minute. It's fairly technical.
Oh.
And you gotta,
I don't do fairly technical well.
And you got to run several command from the command prompt. Yeah, the headline is disabling UAC prompt for certain apps. Not that useful.
Oh.
Yeah, you can. You. You can do it. No, that's for in IE. You want to do it directly in Windows. I honestly don't know how to do that. How do you like that?
There's a Microsoft Knowledge Base article that has been deleted.
Oh, great.
Is this on Windows 7?
Yes. Windows 7 Home Premium.
Here's a guy that says he wrote a program. I don't know if I trust some guy's some program.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that either.
Yeah. I'm going to use stuff to make the whole thing less secure, but I don't want to do that. I just think it would learn every single time I've turned this computer on since I bought it in December. I've said, yes, allow juice. You'd think it would learn.
Yeah, there's no remember, there's no don't ask me again.
No.
I don't have a Windows 7 machine here, but I think...
Oh, here's another from the Tech Republic. This link doesn't involve any command line stuff. It's just Windows GUI stuff. So this might be interesting. It still uses something called the Application Compatibility Toolkit that you download from Microsoft.
Okay.
And basically you change the compatibility of that program so it doesn't need the UAC anymore.
For this one program.
For that one program, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I totally trust this program. Totally.
Right, right, right. Juice is a great program.
Yeah. But I just don't want, you know, I don't want to make the whole thing less secure. I like it with other things. But
I wonder if there's something on Juice's website. Are you running Vista or 7?
7.
She said 7. 7 Home.
Okay, these instructions are for Vista, but it may be similar for 7.
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
Worth a stab in the dark.
Yep. Worst that happens is it doesn't work, and I still got to hit yes.
Yep,
but
there you go.
Well, the solution is never turn your computer off.
Oh, no.
It hurts when I do that. Don't do that.
When something is not in use, yep, I turn it off.
No, that's not a bad idea at all.
No.
All right, give that a try.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys. Oh, and the guy who called up last week to help me get my the question back. Do you really want to delete this?
All right. Did it work? Hello?
No, we lost her.
All right.
All right. Sorry.
Going to take a break. Back. Dave, she was in the middle of a sentence. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you.
Up.
It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Tom Castronova. Please allow me to refresh your memory. Used to be on Mondays from 6 to 9 when I started on this station. Then I moved to Tuesdays and did this thing called Tuesdays with the Two Toms. And we featured Louis Armstrong music. Then I moved back to Monday from 6 to 9. Now I'm back on Tuesday. You got all that? So please, join me Tuesdays from 6 to 9 p.m. right here on member-supported Jazz Radio in Rochester. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Frontier Communications. Frontier Communications offers high-speed internet with the reliability and support you've come to expect from Frontier. For more information, you can visit www.frontiernet.net.
Jazz 90.1 is supported by our members and Agape Physical Therapy. Agape Physical Therapy offers aquatic therapy at their Brockport location, the Gates Chile Hidden Valley Pool, and the Webster Aquatic Center. Using the Bredenko method of using water as physical therapy, Agape provides shallow and deep water exercise areas for partial and non-weight-bearing activities. Agape Physical Therapy's experienced staff offers constant care in treating the young and the young at heart, non-athletes, and athletes. For more information about Agape Physical Therapy, you may call 637-0790 or visit agapephysicaltherapy.com.
I want to finish
school
and then go to
college
to be able to
graduate
and have
the future
my parents couldn't have. Because I know that
going to college
is the best thing I can do for my
future.
The words of a parent help to build the future of a child. The Hispanic Scholarship Fund has the information to help your kids go to college. Visit yourwordstoday.org or call 1-877-HSF-8711. Sponsored by the Hispanic Scholarship Fund and the Ad Council.
If you dig swingin' big bands, Jazz 90.1 has got an afternoon for you, presenting the rebroadcast of the complete Jazz Heritage Series featuring the United States Air Force's Airmen of Note Big Band with guest New York voices in the first hour, Joey DeFrancesco in the second hour, and Gary Simoleon in the third. No matter where you are, don't miss these outstanding jazz broadcasts.
Monday, July 5th, from noon until 3 p.m., only on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, I'm Linda Wildman. Please join me middays, 10 to noon on Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour,
as a matter of fact, Linda will be in here very shortly after it takes over. She also does the German show.
The German program with George. Absolutely. Yeah.
Another great program that follows us.
That's exactly right. And if you are any sort of fan of German music, you really need to be listening to George. All right, the Windows Help and Support Center vulnerability, the details of which have been recently made public by researcher Tavis Ormandy, is being heavily exploited in the wild. According to a recent post on Microsoft's Malware Protection Center blog, public exploitation of the vulnerability started on June 15th, but those attacks were probably undertaken by other researchers since they were targeted and rather limited. After that, the attacks became more widespread and the targets more numerous. Microsoft claimed that as of Wednesday, over 10,000 separate computers had reported witnessing this attack. Computers in Portugal and Russia had seen by far the highest concentration of attacks. The attacks only increased with time. Microsoft started seeing seemingly automated, randomly generated HTML and PHP pages hosting this exploit, and the goal of the attacks was to plant Trojans and viruses on the targeted systems. For those users who don't use Microsoft security solutions with updated signatures for the detection of the exploit, the company advises implementing the workaround listed in the advisory, or, of course, pretty much every antivirus program has a current update, so make sure your antivirus is up to date. So question is, do you feel secure using Windows? That was a stupid question. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
And the sad thing is nobody considers security when they're thinking of what they're using, what they're buying. And then we're all shocked about these security reports about banks that lose customer data and right. A laptop gets stolen, and it's just something we don't think about. And even from the programming standpoint, it's been less of an issue because you're trying to get it out the door.
Now, before we get to the phones, I just want to say that about this. I've been talking with a friend of mine. We're looking at doing a seminar on Google Docs and actually small office, home office ways to save money. It's Google Docs. It's Microsoft Live. It's a couple of other things. And one of the things we were talking about is that if, in fact, you use something like Google Docs or Office Live or something along that line to keep all your documents online, there's that who do you trust problem, of course. But on the other hand, if you lose your laptop, nothing gets lost. The minute you lose your laptop, log on to a machine anywhere in the world and change your password to Google. They can't get to anything now. You know, so let's go back to the phone.
A related story. We had a customer come in this week, lost his iPhone. He got a new iPhone, and he wanted to sync down all his data from the MobileMe syncing service. He couldn't remember his username. Or his password. Ooh, there's a forgot your password link, but there's no forgot your username link.
Because he
used it once a year ago when he set up the iPhone, and it's been happily syncing in the background ever since.
Right, and he never wrote it down or thought about it since, right?
Ouch.
Nothing you can do about that. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Tony. Where are you calling from, Tony?
Oh, Rochester.
And what can we do for you?
I recently bought an iMac, and I'm trying to send an attachment to a friend who has a PC. And I'm not having very much luck. He says he can't can't open it.
So he's getting the attachment.
Well, yes, he's getting my email, and I asked him the question, can you open this now? And he sends back a message, no, I can't.
What type of file are you sending him?
It's a PDF file.
Is it named .pdf? Something .pdf?
Yes.
Okay. When you attach a message to, well, which mail program are you using?
Comes with the unit.
The Apple Mail?
Yes.
Okay. When you attach a message, there's a checkbox that says send Windows-friendly attachments.
Where do you see that?
When you're in Mail and you click the Attach button, where it asks you what file you want to attach, there's a box that says Windows-friendly attachments.
Okay. Now, help me with this. Now, where do I click to get to that place?
When you make a new message,
yeah.
In the buttons at the top of that message,
right.
There's one that says Attach. And you click that, and that's how you attach your message, or you attach a file to a message.
You'll see the list of all the files that you can attach.
So, and that's where you pick what file you want to attach.
Okay, I do that.
And at the bottom of that list, there's a checkbox that says send Windows-friendly attachments.
Underneath the list in the rest of the window.
Yes, I see that.
And you want to make sure that's checked on.
If it's not checked, your friend won't be able to open it.
Well,
theoretically.
He's getting a BinHex file that he has to decode himself.
And if you check that, your friend should then be able to open the file with no trouble.
It'll send it as Base64.
And in fact, if you check it and just leave it checked forever,
yeah.
Mac people can understand that. Windows people now get Windows-friendly attachments. Everybody wins.
It's checked, and it has been. So any other suggestions?
What program is he trying to open the PDF with?
Well, I don't know. A mail program, I guess.
You can't open a PDF program with a mail program.
Okay. He's got to have
Adobe. Well, the Acrobat Reader or the Foxit Reader, he has to have a PDF reader in his computer to open that file.
And with many of the email programs nowadays, you can't open them directly from the window because so many PDFs have malicious viruses in them.
So if he does have... If he does download the Acrobat Reader, will he automatically be able to open that attachment?
Well, what he should do is download the attachment. Save it, right-click on it and say Save As. Right?
Yeah.
That'll download it to his machine, and then he has to remember where he downloaded it to. Then he can go to the machine and double-click on it. And we suggest Foxit Reader as opposed to Adobe Acrobat Reader.
What did you say? What reader?
Foxit, F-O-X-I-T. From Foxit Software. Steve will put up a link on our website.
Okay.
But it's foxitsoftware.com/PDF/reader.
Okay.
It's Foxit Reader, I think 3.0 is the latest for Windows.
There have been many security vulnerabilities in the PDF format where maliciously crafted PDFs can contain viruses and trojans and screw up your system. And Adobe has been rather slow on updating their own PDF reader. And Foxit is very, very fast on updating its reader.
Could that be used also on a Mac?
No, Foxit is Windows only.
Okay.
But on the Mac, you can use Apple Preview, which comes with the computer for viewing PDF files.
Okay. Do you have time for another question?
Very quickly.
I have the Airport Extreme with this, and I also have an XP, a PC machine. And I've got it plugged into the Airport Extreme to get out on the internet. I can get out on the internet, but I can't use Firefox for some reason.
What happens when you try?
I forgot exactly what it says, but it's some window that comes up.
You may have the same problem as one of our earlier callers did. Where Firefox thinks it's been set up with a proxy server that it can't get to.
I went all over this with whoever, I forgot now, with the Time Warner or somebody, and apparently everything checks out. So, anything I might be able to look for, and I know in one person I talked to, that SM. TP, it was SMPT, and they thought that was all right until I went over it and over it again, and I found the error, and I corrected that. But
that's an email issue. That's not a web issue with Firefox.
Firefox has nothing to do with SMTP.
Oh, it doesn't.
So, no, if you're actually using Firefox, then you don't. There's no SMTP setting to begin with.
In the Firefox settings, there's a section for network connectivity. Yeah. I forget. And you're looking for something that says proxy.
Okay.
And you want to make sure that's not checked.
Okay.
Yeah, that you're not using a proxy server.
We're seeing that more and more lately, and I'm not sure why. It's got to be that under the latest update, Firefox changed something.
Well, there were a couple of updates they released really quickly.
Yeah.
There was a problem with Farmville on Facebook, and so they had to update Firefox again to fix that problem. Maybe they introduced
another
problem.
There's more people use Farmville than literally any other application on the Internet.
Yeah.
Ariel's laughing. She must be a Farmville kind of gal.
Yeah.
I don't know, yeah.
Does Internet Explorer work okay on that computer to get to the web?
I haven't had it on for a few days. I'm able to get to the Internet. Yeah, I think it does work.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah,
then it clearly is something in Firefox. If Internet Explorer can get to the web, then it's something in Firefox.
Okay.
And I'm suspecting the proxy server.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okey-doke.
Sure.
Bye.
Thanks.
So one of the things that confuses stuff is that Internet Explorer has a box that says automatic proxy settings.
Right.
And that's checked on by default. And so it looks for a proxy server and looks and looks and looks and looks and looks. And then when it doesn't find one, it gives up and then goes directly to the Internet.
Right.
So if you uncheck that, then it just goes to the Internet.
So it's a little faster.
A little faster, yeah.
Yeah. There's confusion and it is a problem and it's never going to be solved because multiple companies make software, and every one of them does things just a little tiny bit differently.
They want to set up their standard.
Yep.
Right, and they've got their own way, and so you know you have to know enough about each and every one of the programs that's out there and set it up correctly before you can definitely get to where you want to go.
And
I'm suggesting people use Chrome right now because
I love Chrome.
There's been a lot of the problems are now fixed with Firefox. I get that, but I still suggest people use Chrome. There's particularly for JavaScript
it's
type.
It's leaner and meaner.
It's leaner and it's faster.
Was Firefox's claim to fame when it first came out.
Right.
And now it's big and bloated like IE.
Right, exactly. And right now, at least, Chrome is much faster to do things like JavaScript and stuff like that. So
yep.
Particularly if you use any of the Google programs, and of course, Chrome is from Google.
Yeah.
It's just going to fly. All right.
In the Firefox 3.6 series, if you go to Preferences, Advanced, Network, Settings, you'll find the No Proxy button.
There you go. So it may be hidden, but
yeah.
It starts with Network.
Preferences, Advanced, Network, Settings.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Advanced, Network, Settings. Our next caller is Vito. Where are you calling from, Vito?
Chile, New York.
And what can we do for you?
Well, your show's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been trying to do the SP3 update. I have SP2 right now in Windows in XP Home. And every time I try it, and I've tried twice, I'm concerned about bricking my machine, but that hasn't happened. Luckily, it reverts back. And I get this. The destination has changed. It says a component file does not match the verification information present in the component manifest. So I looked at the svcpack.log, and I can't understand it.
Well, yeah, it's not designed for humans to understand.
Mm-mm.
Just programmers at Microsoft.
So what can I do about this?
What's that error message again?
It says here, a component's file does not match the verification information present in the component manifest.
Sounds like a failed download.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you re-downloaded the SP3?
Yeah, I've done it online while I'm actually in the site. I didn't download the full
Yeah, try downloading the standalone installer and then you can be offline to run it.
You think that's gonna be the trick there?
Give it a shot.
Yeah. I'm concerned about bricking the machine. Is that a possibility?
Well,
always. You should
always
have a backup.
Well, the thing of it is as long as you have the restore points turned back on, you can go into system restore.
That's good, but it's better to have a full backup.
Oh, yeah. But, at least you can go back to a point in time, and that saved my butt a number of times for clients.
Yeah, the most common cause of this error is that the setup program is having a problem reading the file itself. So I don't really know what to tell you about that if you've downloaded it multiple times. You may have a bad spot on your hard drive. And, of course, if you have a file and either erase it or overwrite it, and that file is sitting on a bad spot on your hard drive, you're going to download the next file directly on top of it again. So let me suggest that instead of deleting that file, you simply rename it to something like deleteme-later.txt or something. I don't care what you call it. And then download it so it downloads to a different part of your hard drive. Yeah?
How do I determine what file needs to be...
Well, it's deleted. It's that downloaded Service Pack 3 file.
Wherever it puts it on your hard drive, most likely in the download folder.
Right.
It may be going to a temp folder, though.
Well, you downloaded...
I did it as an upgrade. I didn't download the whole SP3.
Then definitely download the whole SP3.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one other thing here. It says, error installing assembly, capital GLE equals 14028. I don't know what that means either.
That may be the corrupted file. So, my suggestion is download the original file. I mean, the whole file, which, of course, you can do. Windows setup, unfortunately, correctly so, actually, very sensitive to errors. Because it knows if it's trying to install something and there's even the tiniest error in it, that's a real problem. So it'll stop immediately. So my suggestion is download that file itself to your machine and install from the hard drive itself.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Particularly that's particularly true when you're talking about a download from... any sort of online thing, if there's just any
SV3
glitch.
Is so huge.
Yeah.
What, 300-400 megs?
Right. So if you're trying to download and install simultaneously, yeah, that could be a problem. That could definitely be a problem.
What was I doing in an installer? Oh, the AVG9 I was installing for a customer. It was updating from 7.5. And it ran for like 20 minutes and then said, oh, you have to uninstall AVG 7.5. Well, I thought you would do that along the way. And then, then it ran for another 20 minutes. So then we had to uninstall, and that took 20 minutes, and then ran the 9 installer again, and it ran for a bunch of time. And then it says, you have to uninstall Norton Antivirus. I don't have Norton Antivirus installed.
But somebody clearly did at one point and then erased it badly. One of the things people have to understand, and I understand that it's difficult to remember these things. If you can just click on a file and drag it to the trash, you think you've deleted it. But deleting a single file and actually uninstalling an application are two very different processes under Windows, because dragging a file to the trash doesn't do anything to the registry. So you have to really uninstall stuff when you want to get rid of it. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey, honey, she's all fixed. Want to go for a spin?
Sure. Honey, what's that in the back seat?
Oh, that's just the 23 pieces I had left over.
Time for a new vehicle? Well, Jazz 90.1 would love to have your old one. Just call 966-5299. Jazz 90.1 will pick it up, plus you'll get a tax deduction.
Is that 966-5299?
Yes. Donate your old vehicle to Jazz 90.1.
Honey?
I'm already dialing.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
What do you love about the radio?
I just like the variety, because it can put you in different moods, and you don't know what to expect. I think my favorite part is you don't know what to expect, so I always get excited when a song is over, because I'm excited for what the next song is going to be.
New artist Caitlin Crosby loves radio.
Still have my heart, you still have my heart.
Discover Caitlin Crosby and other new artists where it's good to be heard. Radio. Always something new and fresh, always free. Go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Every day, you can help good things happen. Claudia, a local health worker in Nicaragua, helps save 6 children from pneumonia. Rosina in Bangladesh helps save 10 children from diarrhea. Aster in Ethiopia helps save 20 from malaria. And Salif in Mali helps save 30 from the effects of malnutrition. Help one, save many. Visit goodgoes.org to find all the ways you can help the good go further. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Phil Dodd, and I think you'll like the mix of music I play every weekday afternoon. I play today's best artists as well as the classic performers who made jazz America's own special art form. I also feature the standards, songs that have stood the test of time and are constantly being reinvented by jazz musicians. So please join me, Phil Dodd, noon to 3, Monday through Friday, right here on Jazz 90.1.
Here's another I Love New York travel tip.
A great New York State tradition continues this summer as historic Saratoga Racecourse hosts its annual meet from July 23rd through September 6th. In addition to the finest in horse racing, the Saratoga Springs area is also home to many fine cultural and recreational activities. Enjoy world-famous musical acts at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. Tour the National Museum of Dance and take advantage of the best in fishing and water recreation at a number of local lakes. For more information on Saratoga's 2010 meet and other area attractions, visit the I Love New York website at iloveny.com or dial 1-800-CALL-NYS. That's 1-800-CALL-NEW-YORK-STATE. A sure bet. Another reason I love New York.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Here's some good news. Apple's software fix for its newly released iOS 4. iOS, trademark Cisco Systems. Seems to be working.
Unlicensed Apple computer.
Apple Inc. They don't do computers anymore. They do iPod-type stuff. Letting a group of mobile users... Let me start that again. Apple's software fix for its newly released iOS 4 seems to be working, letting a group of mobile users finally synchronize with their corporate Microsoft Exchange servers. The glitch was a high-profile embarrassment for Apple when last week some iPhone 4 users reported a battery of synchronization problems. Battery, get it? Apple's iOS incorporates Microsoft's Enterprise Active Sync code in order to link with an Exchange server to synchronize data and to use a battery of Exchange-based security and management features. The Exchange bug affects not only the new iPhone 4, but any device that's been updated to the new firmware, iPod Touch, iPhone 3G, and 3GS. Complaints started emerging last week on various online forums, including Apple's own support discussion group, about a range of Exchange sync problems. In some cases, new iPhone 4 users saw only a blank calendar, though email and contacts synchronized properly. Others said the calendar worked fine, but contacts were only partially synchronized. Another found that the phone was resetting part of his email address, which blocked access to Exchange entirely. The problem seems to happen on all versions of Exchange, at least from 2003. Apple's official support blog described the symptoms as some users may notice that Exchange Active Sync mail, contacts, and calendars do not sync or sync fairly slowly. In addition, some Exchange server administrators may notice their servers running slowly. Nice. The workaround is a new configuration profile that has to be downloaded to each device running iOS 4. The new profile increases the amount of time the iOS 4 device will wait for the Exchange server to respond to its sync requests. Once installed, it's listed under Settings, General Profile. Some afflicted users say the new profile works, but others say there's been no change. Some users speculate that at least the calendar sync problem is triggered by very large calendar files. By archiving old calendar items and so reducing the amount of data being synced, these users say they've solved this problem. Did the iOS 4 patch work for you? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. Apple's just having one problem after another. They never used to have these problems, and that was because they never talked to anybody but themselves.
And they were very careful about not releasing too many things at once.
Right.
They were really hit last year when the iPhone 3GS came out. New phone operating system, new version of Mobile Me. What was the four? They announced four or five things the same weekend, and everything just died.
Yeah, right.
Everyone was trying to do everything. So and this year, at least, they spread out the iPhone.
The pain.
The iPhone OS update came out a week before the phone came out, so that people with the older phones could update their OS. But 600,000 people signed up the first day, and almost 2 million in 2 days.
Right.
And killed AT&T servers trying to process 2 million people in 2 days.
Right. Right, and that's the other part of the problem. And I get it. There's some pain involved in that for Apple. The problem wasn't theirs in that particular case. The problem was AT&T servers or AT&T's network.
Yeah.
And
if you were upgrading your phone, there were problems. If you're just buying a new phone on a new contract, that went pretty quick.
Yeah, I'm sure there was.
But I'd read some other blog that 70% of iPhone 4 users are upgrades, not new.
Right. Right. It's a very interesting set of problems that Apple never used to have. Microsoft started with these problems day one because they've always had a lot of third-party applications that they either used inside the system or used as connectivity instead of connected to in some way. Apple has originally very little connectivity with the outside world. And when it did it under their own terms. But as time goes on, we're finding that, you know, they realize they have to play in a much bigger arena than they used to have to play in. And so it's a real problem for them. I do understand that. I sympathize with it, but it's still, you know, get over
it. It is, yeah.
Play in the big sandbox, you're going to probably play with
the big
kids.
Boys. It's the price of poker.
That's exactly right.
You got to ante up and shut up.
Yep. All right, another news item. Let's not talk about Microsoft for a minute. This is kind of fascinating. Internet Explorer, as we all know, has been in free fall compared to its hotter rivals, Firefox and Google's Chrome, in terms of market share. But Microsoft's browser has finally reversed a small portion of its worldwide market share losses. Just a year ago, IE share stood at 66.97%, but it's been dropping every single month, hitting a low of 59.75% in May of 2010. Now,
who came up with those numbers, Microsoft?
No. Other people. This is an analytics firm, Net Applications, as a matter of fact. And they follow this worldwide. Now, still, 59.75%, they're running on more than half the computers in the world. So I'm really not shedding any tears for them.
Mm-mm.
In the meantime, in that year, Firefox shot up from 22.98% to 24.32%. Chrome went up from 2.84% to 7.04% during the same period. So Chrome is really the winner in all of this. But Microsoft has crept back over the 60% mark, 60.32% share in June, gained at the expense of Firefox, according to new data from the analytics firm Net Applications. Chrome and Safari both posted small gains. Internet Explorer had already started to gain usage in the United States in May, but now the market share gains are being seen worldwide. Older versions of Internet Explorer, like IE6, continue to lose share, in part because of very valid concerns about security. Microsoft credited its June gains to a new marketing campaign called Confidence that's designed to show off the security features of Internet Explorer 8. And, in fact, the IE boost does come from IE8. It is the fastest-growing browser right now with a 0.66% increase in share. That's actually real good.
Well, the only reason it's really gaining is because a lot of folks, you know, if they're getting new computers, don't realize that, they can also put Firefox back on this new Windows 7 and it'll work fine.
Right. Firefox, Chrome, Safari all work on it.
Yeah, and they're just, you know, again, it's a brand-new computer, so they still have the old IE on it, so by default, they're using it. So that's the only reason Microsoft is still gaining is because they're the default browser, and a lot of folks don't realize it.
Right. Well, and nobody at Microsoft is actually dancing yet. They realize that a short-term market share reversal isn't really a permanent trend yet, so it'll be a while before anybody knows that.
They'll
of course,
the farm on it.
Right. What's interesting is the previews of Internet Explorer 9 are supposed to be faster, much speedier performance, and much improved support for web standards. Of course, that's from Microsoft's own press release, so I suppose we'll find out. So our question to you, are you using Internet Explorer? why. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415, Steve.
Say, didn't pieces of Windows 8 leak this week?
Yeah, it's yeah, who knows.
Yeah. Although Microsoft did do something kind of interesting. They have an Insta-load.
Insta-load!
Insta-load, there's a load.
Wasn't that a camera at some point? The Insta-load?
That was the Instamatic.
Yeah, there was certainly the Instamatic, but yep. Somebody else had an Insta-load.
Yeah, the Microsoft Insta-load technology is a new way to make a battery connector, and they're showing pictures of a mouse, so that it doesn't matter what way you put the battery in. Because we're always frantically putting batteries in the wrong way, and then something doesn't work, and you got to take it apart, and you're trying to look at this little tiny diagram inside the device to figure out which way the batteries go.
All right.
So they've developed this new technology where each battery terminal in the device has a plus and a minus. So it actually doesn't matter which way the batteries go in. It's one of those things that's so freaking simple. Why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, right.
And the technology is now available for licensing.
Well, that's
so
nice.
So before long, it won't matter the polarity of which direction you put your batteries in. You just shove them in and let it go.
Well, maybe not. I mean, how many people complain about that? Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So are you going to pay Microsoft's licensing fee for every device you send out?
It's one of those things you don't complain about. You just swear at yourself and put them in the other way.
Here's what really porks. I'll tell you what actually porks me off. Is the fact that every one of these devices nowadays is black and
With black writing.
And black writing. It's just a little raised thing. I can't see it half the time.
With a black light that lights up black to let you know you've done it.
The first thing we do is when we get a device, we've got a little bottle of paint and we put a little white dot on the plus side.
Yep.
So when we pull the batteries out, we see where the battery goes next time. It's fast, convenient, easy, and all it takes is a couple of seconds of swearing with a flashlight to figure out which part is which way is plus once.
Yep.
But Microsoft offers fair and reasonable licensing terms.
From whose perspective?
Yeah. From Microsoft's perspective.
Yeah, I say, who determined fair?
Exactly.
And define fair.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, they're interested only in their customers, and as always, their customers are in fact the shareholders. It's not you, it's not anybody else, and they're a publicly held company, and that's perfectly fair. That's the way it's supposed to work. They're a publicly held company, and their customers are the shareholders, and that will never ever change for any publicly held companies. The only time you get somebody who cares about what we think of as the customer, the person who pays for the product, is a privately held corporation or, of course, free software where nobody pays anybody and you just get it and download it. So it's a tough problem in the world. You are going to make your customer happy. And if that's at the expense of everybody else, oh, well, you know, you got to make your customer happy. If your customer is the shareholder. So get over it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough thing. So
I just found a new product here, and I'm trying to decide if it's the neatest thing or the stupidest thing I've ever seen. It's an eSATA to USB adapter.
That's stupid.
So you can put your screaming fast eSATA drive onto your god-awful slow USB ports.
Yeah.
Unless you have USB 3, which then can keep up with eSATA. But if you've got USB 3, you probably have eSATA already, right?
Right. All right, that music tells me I've got 1 minute to get out of here. Which means that you've wasted another 2 hours of your life listening to us. I have no idea what you're thinking. But let me thank again, let me remind you, this is Independence Day. And you know, from my point of view, God bless America. And thanks to tomorrow's the 4th of July, which makes it Independence Day. This is Independence Day weekend. I left off the word weekend. But it is Independence Eve. And thanks to all of you who served your country to bring us this independence. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great member supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.